the destination is always cultural here. I've got Dan Cancian and Emmett Gates joining myself, your host David Farini. Boys, how are we going after a good weekend of international football action, Dan?
Yeah, great, great. It was a good week of international football, but I'm looking forward to the return of club football in Serie A.
Well, in fairness there, Serie C has been going. We'll put a couple of articles up on the site about that, including three Serie C teams to follow. So go and check out that, listeners. Emmett, you've written a piece, a couple of recently, about Italy themselves. First of all, how are you? And tell us a little bit what we're going to talk about later in the show regarding Roberto Baggio.
Yeah, doing good, David. It's good to be on another episode of the Destination Calcio pod. I wrote a couple of pieces about the current Italy side, and obviously then we'll be going deep into Robbie Baggio at USN 84, and well, we all know how that ended. So, but yeah, it's good to be back on the pod.
It is. It's good to be back. Let's get into the Israel-Italy game. It finished 2-1 for the Italians, Flatesi and Keane. You both watched that. I know you did. Dan has written an article on Spalletti for those readers who want to go and check that out on the site. Dan, tell me a bit about Luciano Spalletti and the article that we're going to speak about. We'll talk about it now. Luciano Spalletti, Italy, where is he at and what do you think of the performance against Israel?
Well, it's a new dawn, isn't it? A new dawn after a new dawn, which proved to be a false dawn. Italy were dismal in Euro 2024, but they've looked so much better against France. They looked really good last night as well. They weren't as entertaining as they were on Friday, but they did the job, which is more than you could say about their performances in the summer.
And it was raining, in all fairness.
It was, yes. Spalletti looks different. The team looks different. Spalletti looks a lot more like Napoli Spalletti. He's got a spring in his step. He made a point, which I thought was very interesting, in the press conference, of saying that the players look better because they're allowed to play the same system they play for their clubs, which to me was an admission of maybe we got the tactics wrong in the Euros and we've had to go back to the drawing board and we've had to give them a bit more freedom, a bit more structure as well within that freedom. And the results were there for all to see. I mean, the performance in Paris was superb. Last night they were good. Frattesi, Tonali and Ricci looked really good in midfield. Keane did what Keane does, a lot of running around, a lot of trying to create space for his teammates. So far so good. 6 points after two games.
Can't ask for more than that. And two away games, technically the one last night against Israel was in Budapest, but it was bucketing down. Italy played some smooth football, regardless of the weather and the conditions there. You were saying that Spalletti wanted to play the systems that most players are playing at club level. Well, that is indirectly and silently admitting that Italians love the three-man backline and a five-man midfield with one player, a secondo punta, behind the striker. Emmett, let's throw to you. Let's talk about France. What a result. I mean, no one was expecting that.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when, you know, Italy concede in the first 14 seconds. Di Lorenzo continuing his bad form over the last year for the Azzurri, just kind of falling asleep and not realising that France were honing in on him. And you're thinking 1-0 down. It's like, this is going to be, you know, it could be a cricket score, obviously, and then off the back of what happened in Germany in the summer. But to be fair to Spalletti and his men, you know, the calm down, you know, Ricci in midfield, kind of as a regista, got things going, was calm, wasn't impatient, and then Italy just built up from there. And obviously, you know, we've all seen Federico Di Marco's stunning goal, the nice little give and go with Tonali, who was brilliant in his first game back for Italy in over a year. You wouldn't think he was away that long.
Sensational.
Spalletti was worried that he didn't have 90 minutes in his legs, but he didn't really show it. You know, it was beautiful, DeMarco's goal. I think I'm going to go out on a bit of a limb, but I generally think that DeMarco is one of Italy's few world-class players at the moment, with probably Barella and Donnarumma. And obviously his strike against France was brilliant. And yeah, as you said, who would have predicted Italy winning in France, their first win in France for over 70 years? And I don't think many seen it coming, but yeah, brilliant performance.
I don't think the players saw it coming, nor Spalletti, and what a turnaround. You have to think, I did that game for Flash Score commentating it, and to think that I was just getting into the lineups and Di Lorenzo gave up possession and Barcola just cruised on through. Donnarumma said he was still putting his gloves on. I mean, that is just unbelievable. And after that European performance at the Euros, I mean, shocking stuff. Everyone just thought it couldn't get any worse. It actually did. And Spalletti also came out and said that they bounced back well. The mentality's there. Take some mental strength to come back from that. And Di Lorenzo recovered. He atoned with a couple of clearances in the six-yard box in the second half, especially. He played okay. But, I mean, looking at that lineup, he's gone with a 3-5-1-1. Pellegrini started that game. I don't think that worked out for Spalletti. Dan, did you think that Raspadori was better behind Keane in that circumstance? Would Raspadori suit Retegi more?
I thought Raspadori played really well. I just think that it's been very unlucky with the way Italy have gone about their business under Spalletti, because, as you mentioned, the 3-5-1-1 worked well for them. But it worked well for them until the Euros, and Raspadori was Italy's top scorer up until then. Then Spalletti, for reasons unbeknown to pretty much everyone, decided to move away from that and drop Raspadori in favour of Scamacca. And Raspadori was on the bench against France, but he came on and made an instant impact. So I've got to think that it's got to have to be the main choice going forward, either alongside Retegi or alongside Keane, because they all really seems to suit him. And, you know, I mean, he's been excellent when called upon before the Euros. So I'm not too sure why he was dropped for the Euros to begin with. But if Italy are going to stick to this formation, it's got to be in there.
Sure. And just going back to the Raspadori issue, doesn't get that much game time for Napoli. He's not the most called upon attacker that they have, and it's a similar issue with Fratesi at Inter. So these players are going to clubs that necessarily are looking at other options. Obviously Napoli now with Conte, Spalletti's moved on from there. He did have to rely on Raspadori during that Scudetto winning season. Emmett, we've been to Italy recently to see Napoli play twice, in Verona and then at home. Two very different performances. Raspadori, not necessarily a big part of Napoli's push. Do you think it's similar to the Fratesi issue at Inter? They're not getting game time there, or they're not having the same impact, but coming into the national team, they're doing it well.
Yeah, I think as regards to Raspadori and Fratesi, I think it's two different issues. I think for Raspadori, in my opinion, he's better as a second striker in a two-man partnership. But Antonio Conte isn't going to play that system at Napoli. Obviously, Conte is famous for being a 3-5-2 man. And I think he's better off, like, in the system, as we saw against Israel, a 3-5-1-1, playing in behind Keane, Retegi, Scamacca, you know, maybe thinking ahead, future down the line. To me, he's a victim of the system, or of coaches playing different systems that don't maximise his strengths. To me, he is better playing just behind a striker. Whereas Fratesi is an odd one at Inter, because I thought when he signed he was going to slot into that, you know, obviously Simone Inzaghi also plays a 3-5-2 or a variation of it, and I thought you would have had Barella, Fratesi and Calhanoglu, but Henrik Mkhitaryan just obviously is a favourite of Simone Inzaghi's, and he's kind of keeping Fratesi out of the team. So I think it's two different issues, but at least when they're called upon for Italy, they deliver, so may it continue is what I think.
And it could be down to some freshness from not playing as much or not being called upon as much at club level. I should say Raspadori has started under Conte this season, obviously because of the confusion over the Osimhen situation, whether he was staying or going, and with Lukaku coming in. So Raspadori was preferred to Simeone by Conte. But it could be just about being fresh, or having a fresh mentality, or that sense of relief where they go back to the national team away from the pressures of club where they have to compete against all the foreign superstars. Let's move on. Let's go to the destinationculture.com website, gents. You guys have been busy typing away, writing away. So let's have a look at this. And then I cried how Gianfranco Zola's only World Cup appearance turned into a nightmare, by Dan Cancian on the site. The controversy surrounding the last ever game played at Foxborough. Dan, take us through this piece. Why did you write it? And I guess, what is the overall message in your story?
Well, I mean, why that variety? Well, I suppose, you know, 30 years on from USA 94 World Cup, which is the first World Cup I really have a clear memory of. Everyone seems to hate USA 94. I loved it. I loved the massive goals. I loved the kits. I loved the players. I like to say I loved the football, but my six-year-old tactical brain wasn't particularly developed. You could say the same about my 36-year-old tactical brain, for that matter. I mean, Italy, Nigeria was probably one of the worst games of the tournament from a tactical standpoint and from an entertaining standpoint. But I mean, you can't just beat two late goals for drama, and you know, Nigeria leading 1-0. By equalizing the 89th minute and then scoring the winner in extra time. But, I mean, that story has been told 1,000 times. Zola's story hasn't been told that much because he was one of Serie A's best strikers leading into the World Cup, but he was on the bench. Going back to what you were saying earlier, Italy have a lack of option up front. Back then, they could afford to keep the likes of Pierluigi Casiraghi, Zola, and one between Signori and Massaro on the bench. So Zola comes on with Italy 1-0 down. There's about half an hour left. He loses the ball. He wins the ball back. And there comes referee Ernesto Brizio Carter. And he sends him off straight away. And I believe Zola had 15 yellow cards over 17 years in football. So a red card was very much foreign territory for him, so to speak. And I've always been fascinated by his reaction because it's the most mild-mannered footballer you can think of. He started kicking out in frustration at the advertising board. And that was his only World Cup appearance, and he never played at the World Cup again. So I thought we should probably get the story out there and dive into it.
Yeah, there's a couple of different narratives in that article because you've got that issue where it's his only ever World Cup appearance, and it's because he gets sent off. He was actually available for the final, but not used, and I wish he was in hindsight. I'm sure everyone wishes he was in hindsight. People hate the tournament because of the next topic we're going to talk about that Emmett's written about, but that Zola red card was an opportunity, let's say, for Roberto Baggio to finally step up because he wasn't able to perform at his maximum in that tournament. There was all sorts of issues through USA 94. It was that group stage where four teams, Italy's group, four countries, level on 4 points, Italy scraped through. And I guess that's a good segue to turn over to Emmett and his article about Roberto Baggio. And Emmett, let's have a look at that one. Back to destinationculture.com we go. Just going to click on that one and let's find your piece. Roberto Baggio at USA 94, the man who died standing. Take us through it.
Yeah, I mean, it was painful even to write that article. But as Dan alluded to earlier, it's 30 years since the tournament. And like Dan, USA 94 was kind of my introduction to football. I was 7 years old. And I remember watching the semi-final and seeing this guy in blue with a ponytail scoring 2 goals against Bulgaria. And then that was it. I just kind of fell in love with Baggio, and then it was when that final happened, I remember crying for 2 hours after his missed penalty. But on the 30th anniversary, it kind of felt, yeah, it had to be told. And I think it crystallizes just how much of a cruel sport football can be, because I mean, even though it's unjust, people still to this day, the narrative is Baggio cost Italy the World Cup, even though everybody neglects that Massaro and Baresi had already missed. And all Baggio was really doing was trying to keep Italy in the shootout, even if he had scored. But people often forget that Italy would have been nowhere near the final if it hadn't have been for Baggio. Obviously, he got the 2 against Nigeria, he got the 1 against Spain, he got the 2 against Bulgaria. Italy were home. As he said himself after the Nigerian game, when he scored twice, he's like, the plane was on the runway, but I told everybody to get off. But he did have a shocking group stage. It was actually Dino, the other Baggio, who was the best Baggio out of the two in the group stages. Baggio had tendonitis going into the tournament, you know, and the man himself always said he was only maybe 100% fit three or four times a season. His body was that fragile. And going into USN 84, he wasn't fit. And Sacchi really did him no favours by starting him the first game against the Republic of Ireland. Paul McGrath had him in his pocket, which Irish people still go on about to this day. Anytime, if you're talking to Irish people and you mention Baggio, they'll always bring up Paul McGrath having him in his pocket. In the second game against Norway, Sacchi takes him off when Gianluca Paliuga gets sent off, and Baggio turns around and like, you don't need to be a lip reading expert to read Baggio basically saying, this guy's crazy, what is he doing? I think that in the Norway game, he was 20 minutes he lasted on the pitch. Against Mexico, again, a non-performance. And then it was in the Nigeria game where he says he got the house off his back. And then from then on, it's a different Baggio. He scores the winner against Spain. He gets the brace against Bulgaria. And then in Bulgaria, in the second half, he pulls his hamstring. And he's taken off, but he's in tears after the final whistle. And what people don't realise about the final of USN 84, for me, it's one of the worst finals in my lifetime. But it was played at 12:30 in California in the middle of July. So FIFA obviously were doing it with the European audience in mind. But as a spectacle, what were they really expecting? You know, and Italy had to fly from the East Coast to the West Coast. And Baggio's training amounted to kicking a football against the wall in a reception room of a hotel. Like, not exactly ideal preparation for the biggest game of your career. So as you alluded to, David, Zola probably should have been better starting, and then Baggio comes on as a cameo or a super sub in the second half if things aren't going well. And the game kind of passed Baggio by, and obviously we know how the penalty shootout happened, but it symbolises how cruel a sport can be, because if anybody didn't deserve to miss a penalty, it was him. And it's all the more ironic considering how good he was from spot kicks throughout his whole career. He had a success ratio of 85%, which was the best in the history of Serie A until Francesco Totti replaced him a few years ago. So yeah, it was a difficult piece to write and to relive, but because it's the 30th anniversary, it had to be told.
So a perfect chronology there, starting with Dan's piece about Zola, getting into Emmett's piece about Baggio in that World Cup final. Gents, it was one of those tournaments that brought a lot of highs thanks to a few superb performers. And then that heartbreaking story, one about Zola, one about Baggio. Took a big effort from Baggio to come back in 98 and score a penalty in the shootout there. A defining moment in his career. As you said, Emmett, what a penalty percentage that he had in terms of conversions. I think we'll leave it there, guys. We'll just tell people to go over to the website. There's some more, there's a couple of other posts about Italy to have a look at. More recent ones, of course, apart from Zola and Baggio. We do have a piece on Spalletti. And Emmett, you're also tackling a new one about what Spalletti can expect in terms of attacking options.
Yeah, I'm writing a piece as we speak about who could potentially lead Italy in attack in the coming months. Obviously, there's internationals in October, November and March. And it's just a look at who the list of options that Spalletti has to choose from going forward.
Perfect. Guys, let's leave it there. Dan Cancian, Emmett Gage, thanks for joining. I'm David Farini. We are here on Destination Calcio. I will direct you over to the site. Features, Serie A News, Serie B, Serie C, Stadium Guides, DCTV, the podcast, you name it. It's all there, all the divisions and the Azzurri this week. We'll be back for the international break with more Azzurri in, what, 2 or 3 weeks' time. We'll tell you to go and check out our Calcio Binge series. And with that binge, we're in Como this weekend and Bergamo. Wait for that one. It's coming out next week. Gents, thank you.
Thanks, David.
Cheers, David. Pleasure.